next case, which is Firestein versus Parkview Hospital. Ms. Rockwell?
May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors. This case is about religious retaliation, which raises issues concerning the summary judgment standard and waiver. The case begins with two co-workers, one a devout Catholic, the plaintiff, the other a renounced Catholic, Jeanette Bauer. These two co-workers talked about their religious differences because of the Catholic Church's strong opposition to Ms. Bauer's chosen lifestyle. Eventually, Ms. Bowers became the plaintiff's supervisor. At her first opportunity, only 2 weeks after getting that position, Ms. Bowers wrote false comments in the plaintiff's performance evaluation, falsely accusing the plaintiff of breaching patient confidentiality. In this day and age of HIPAA regulations, a breach of patient confidentiality is the kiss of death for hospital employment. When Ms. Bowers was confronted with the lack of any evidentiary support for the comments regarding the breach of confidentiality, Ms. Bowers lamely claimed that she only meant the plaintiff was too loud. The plaintiff complained to HR and to another co-worker, Slaybaugh. She specifically complained that she believed she was being discriminated against because of her devout Catholic beliefs, which were strongly opposed to Ms. Bowers' chosen lifestyle. Ms. Bowers not only complained about her belief that this was because of her Catholicism, she provided the HR person with the history of Ms. Bowers' animus towards Catholicism. She gave specific examples of comments, gestures, and the fact that Ms. Bowers had renounced the Catholic faith. Both Ms. Bowers and Ms. Slaybaugh also testified that they understood Ms. Firestein's, the plaintiff's comments and complaints to be expressions that she was being prejudiced against by Ms. Bowers because of her devout Catholicism. In response to the plaintiff's complaints that she was being discriminated against because of her devout Catholic beliefs, the HR department removed the plaintiff from her position in Bowers' department. The first legal argument I'd like to address is the fact that we believe there's sufficient evidence in the record to show that the plaintiff engaged in protected activity.
Can we, before you get into that, can we go to sort of the end of it in terms of the adverse employment action? Because she was removed from that position, but it was, she was, had pay, and she was given 30 days to find another position within the company.
Correct.
She pulled herself out of that, and then found employment outside. So how do we know that the company would have not found another position or a comparable position? I mean, have you shown that she'd had an adverse employment action, that there was an adverse employment?
We believe we have, Your Honor. She absolutely attempted to find another position within the company. She worked with the recruiting officer of the company. There were no positions within her abilities that offered the same hours of work or the same rate of pay that she was receiving. This is a woman who had to work days because she had small children at home. And there were no daytime, full-time jobs that paid her the same as the position they pulled her out of.
Had the 30-day period run?
I believe the evidence is there were never any positions even within that 30-day period. The hospital did not terminate her employment after the 30 days. I think it was more like after 60 days. And the plaintiff needed a job. She needed a paycheck, and she went out.
How many days did you say?
The hospital didn't terminate her after the first 30 days. They waited until more like 60 days to terminate her.
I thought she was given, help me out here, I thought she was given 14 days to find a new position, and beyond that she could use 14 days of her vacation time, and after that she would be out of work. Is that not correct?
No, I think you're confusing the amount of time she had to find a new position with the amount of pay she received.
Oh, okay.
She went on FMLA leave for a 2-week period of time, and that's what they paid her for.
Right.
using her vacation, and then they offered to pay her another 14 days out of her remaining balance of days she had available to cover part of that 30-day search period. But we believe that whether she was paid or not is a different issue from the fact that she was removed from a job. The hospital itself put her in the position of not having a job and having to find one. The fact that they made an empty gesture of saying she could find one, if there was one available within the hospital, they'd let her have it, doesn't resolve the fact that she was out of work because of them. They removed her from the department. We believe, going back to where I was, that the evidence is sufficient that she engaged in protected activity. The reasonable basis for her belief that she was being discriminated against on the basis of her devout Catholicism was the history she related to Human Resources of Bowers' open animosity towards Catholicism. Ms. Bowers had made comments that raising a child in the Catholic faith would brainwash the child, that raising the child in the Catholic faith would make him guilty for the rest of his life. She made gestures of disgust when Bowers explained she was going to pray. She openly renounced the Catholic faith herself. I don't think there's any dispute that there's a factual evidentiary background for Ms. Firestein as a plaintiff to have a reasonable belief that these things were happening to her because this woman had a problem with the plaintiff's devout Catholicism. I think the case law, back to the early mid-1960s, says we don't look at the way the plaintiff articulates her claim. The fact that Ms. Firestein said, "It's my opinion," shouldn't be dispositive of this issue. Her opinion had an underlying foundation in the evidence, and I think the court is required to look at the evidence as to whether it was reasonable to conclude that was based on her Catholicism. We also addressed the fact that we believe that the defendants waived the whole argument on the engaged in protected activity by waiting until the reply brief to raise it. We've covered that waiver sufficiently in our brief, so I'm going to go on and talk about the second legal argument, which is the policy reason for the termination. This court, as well as almost every federal appellate court, has long held that a shift in the reasons for the adverse action taken by an employer is sufficient evidence of pretext that the question should go to a jury. In this case, Parkview provided at least three stated reasons for removing Ms. Firestein from her position. The first reason they gave to Ms. Firestein at the time they removed her was Ms. Bowers is angry and doesn't want to work with you anymore. The second reason they gave in their sworn answers to interrogatories was that Ms. Firestein herself asked not to have to go back and work in the department with Ms. Bowers, which that in of itself is a hotly contested issue of fact. And then the third reason, the one they used for summary judgment, was that the plaintiff violated the anti-discrimination policy by complaining that she was being discriminated against. A policy, by the way, which is not in the record. Even though the shifting burden, I mean the shifting reasons for the...
Wait a minute, the policy that was not submitted to the court as a document or anything?
No, it was not. There is a written anti-discrimination policy. It was never in evidence before the court. It's not part of the record. But that's the policy that the court ruled that Parkview's argument that they removed the plaintiff for violating.
How did that policy come to the attention of the court?
It was argued by the defendants in their brief. And there's a floating fourth possibility for why the defendants claimed that the plaintiff was removed from the department. They kind of suggest that the director of nursing services, Eileen Brackett, didn't want her coming back to the department because Ms. Bowers and Ms. Firestein could not get along. That's yet just another different reason that we believe makes that an issue that needs to go to the court. Needs to go to the jury. I apologize. Unless you have any questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you. Station.
Thank you. Thank you, and may it please the court. My name is John Tyson. I'm here on behalf of the Appellee Parkview Health System. Your Honor, there are a number of issues that I would like to address. The first one is this question about the policy not being in the record. The record is replete with references to this policy.
References doesn't mean it's in the record, though.
The actual policy is not part of the record, but Ms. Firestein admits she was aware of the policy against making negative comments about one's sexual orientation. She had read it. It is referenced as Exhibit E to her deposition. The record is just that Exhibit E, which is the actual policy, isn't attached.
Since you mentioned it, let me see if you can help me with my problem. Those comments, the allegedly negative comments about someone's sexual orientation, those comments were made in the context of exploring with a coworker her thought that she was being discriminated against because of her religious views regarding that lifestyle or sexual orientation. Is that correct?
That is basically correct, Your Honor. What happened was, the day after she left upset about this evaluation, she called a coworker. She didn't call somebody in management or human resources and said, I got a poor evaluation because my supervisor, Jeanette Bowers, also your supervisor's, is a lesbian. And I'm a Catholic, and she knows I disapprove of her lifestyle. That's what happened.
So it's her, but it's her vocalization of her religious discrimination concerns that allegedly violated the company's policy and caused her termination.
No, it's her comment about her supervisor's lesbianism.
Well, you've got a real problem because you're talking about your policy with regard to anti-discrimination based on sexual orientation and religious beliefs, don't you?
Your Honor, we don't have a problem with somebody coming to us and...
Well, you may have a problem, depending on what we decide.
Yes, Your Honor.
See, it's like saying that a worker who speaks to another worker about her concerns, let's say, of racial discrimination, could be terminated for discussing the supervisor's race and thus violating the policy against making negative comments about race. Do you see what I'm saying? The whole thing is very complicated as far as I'm concerned. But bottom line, the case would have been a lot easier if you had simply articulated a reason for your actions unrelated to her discrimination claim. Because...
Your Honor, there is in the record... I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean
to... No. Go ahead.
There is in the record... And we argued it as part of our pretext. The reason that we did what we did was when Ms. Brackett made the decision, and this is in the record at 366 and 368, she says, all I knew about was she was complaining about an unfair evaluation. I made the decision right then, not knowing anything about a claim of religious discrimination, that the two couldn't work together. And at page 376 in the record, she says, the relationship was just not going to work. Later on, she finds out about this telephone call, because actually that was the telephone call was the next day or later. She finds out about that, and she does think that that's inappropriate what happened.
Look, Parkview says she was removed because she violated the company's policy prohibiting employees to make negative comments about another's sexual orientation, right?
Yes.
Why did she make it?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
She made it because of religious beliefs?
She makes it to a coworker. She never filed a claim of discrimination with us.
Well, that's not what I asked. She made it because of religious belief.
That's what she said in the telephone call.
Well, are you discriminating against her because of her religious belief?
No, Your Honor. We did what we did to her because she made a comment about one...
Based on religious belief.
One sexual orientation.
See, I think it's so intertwined that you're trying to parse it, but that's a problem.
Well, Your Honor, aside from that, what Judge Lee determined on whether this was protected activity is an independent basis for us to prevail. He found that because a personnel policy cannot be, as a matter of law, an adverse job action, there was none. And secondly, we can't lose sight of the fact that this was a good evaluation she received.
Yeah, but
she had expectations.
The problem is, I think, you didn't say she was removed from her position because of a gross overreaction to a largely positive review, established her problems working with a particular supervisor. What you said was what we've been talking about. I'm not going to go through it all again. Right?
It was the relationship wasn't going to work between the two of them. She had violated the policy, but we didn't terminate her for that. Our policy says you're subject to termination. We didn't terminate her for that. The relationship wasn't going to work. Our supervisor was in tears because this came out. And when it's undisputed in the record that Ms. Firestein was upset.
What came out?
When the fact that she let a coworker know, and Ms. Firestein let a coworker know that Ms. Bowers was a lesbian. Ms. Bowers found out about it and came in crying to our human resources department. She was in tears, and it undermined her ability to supervise. And our HR people said, this relationship isn't going to work. Ms. Brackett made that determination, undisputed in the record, before she knew anything about a religious discrimination claim, because she met with her about the poor evaluation. And she concluded then, this relationship isn't going to work. That's why we did what we did. That's why we separated these two people. Ms. Bowers was a supervisor with us for 17 years, and this woman was a secretary in the department. They both had good work records. There's no dispute about that. And she even got a good evaluation. She got a merit increase for it. Everything on this evaluation said met or exceeded expectations. And then we gave her 30 days to get another job in the department. We actually gave her more time than that. And 2 weeks later, she comes to us. We did offer her two positions. One was part-time. And one was a nighttime position.
And she needed a day position.
And she did. I'll grant you that. And then approximately 15 days into this process, she gets a job with another employer and doesn't follow up.
But if you offer her a nighttime or a part-time when you know she can't take those positions, surely that could be viewed as an adverse employment action.
I don't dispute that could be viewed as it, but we didn't offer it knowing that she couldn't take it. I mean, she could have said, sure, I can work nights. I don't think there's anything in the record about that. But, the fact of the matter is she never engaged in protected activity from the get-go.
And when did you raise that in your reply brief?
Well, Your Honor, we raised it. We didn't label it as such, but we raised it in
so
two parts.
That would have been helpful, probably, to label.
We did
address. There are terms of art in this area that are helpful.
I agree, Your Honor, but we did raise it in the pretext section of our brief, and we raised it in two separate places, at page 43 of the record and 44. At page 43, we specifically said, Firestein's retaliation claim is undermined by the weakness of her discrimination claim, citing Hall versus Bodine. I think this court recognized that the issue of pretext and the issue of protected activity overlap. We also raised it at page 44, where we said, due to the baselessness of the underlying discrimination claim, Firestein cannot fulfill her burden of establishing the reason for removing her from the secretarial position is a pretext.
So the words protected activity were not specifically identified.
No, we said the baselessness of her discrimination claim, which is the same thing. Quite frankly, I'll concede we should have labeled it as such. But it's all the same evidence. And whether it's then or now or at trial, the bottom line is going to be that there is no adverse job action when she makes her discrimination claim because she's complaining about a performance evaluation. I believe the law is that a performance evaluation is not considered adverse job action. And as a matter of law, then, now, and at trial, if we go there, it was a good evaluation. She can't change it. It is what it is.
Makes sense.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Rockwell, you have 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. The first thing I want to address is these comments or complaints that Ms. Feierstein made to her co-worker, Slaba. Those in and of themselves are the protected activity. They're protected under Title VII. They're protected under the National Labor Relations Act as concerted activity. So the fact that she made these complaints, which were discrimination complaints, that by their very nature required her to address Ms. Bauer's sexual orientation, are protected activity to begin with. The other thing I wanted to point out is that this whole issue about Bauer's sexual preference, sexual orientation not being known in the workplace until my client complained to Ms. Slaybaugh had the evidence all backwards. Ms. Slaybaugh told my client that Ms. Bauer had this sexual preference. Ms. Bauer told my client she had this sexual preference. It was known in the workplace that it was Ms. Bauer's sexual preference. So I think that's not the point here. She didn't disclose something that was unknown, and she never made negative comments about Ms. Bauer's sexual preference. Her comments were, I think she's discriminating against me because my Catholic belief doesn't approve of her sexual preference. How that fits into a policy that says you cannot make negative, disparaging remarks about a person's protected class, which includes sexual orientation for this employer, just makes no sense to us. The policy itself, if it is upheld that an employer can terminate an employee for violating the anti-discrimination policy by complaining about discrimination and necessarily referring to the person who's the discriminator's protected class, then it turns everything upside down and you'll never have any protection from retaliation. This employer is the largest employer in Allen County. They have over 5,000 employees. And the opinion of the court that exists right now that says this was a legitimate violation of a policy reason to terminate says that not one of those employees can dare complain about any kind of discrimination without fear of being terminated for violating the policy by stating the person who discriminated against them had an animus.
Thank you, Ms. Rocco. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken.